You know, when you search for something on Netflix, what you get is only a fraction of what they really have? The streaming service actually has more than 18,000 titles globally, but only about 6,000 of those are available in the good old US of A. That means you're missing out on literally thousands of great shows. Unless, of course, you use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that lets you change your online location, protecting your devices from unwanted snooping and allowing you to control where streaming services and other websites think you're located. There are over 100 different locations to choose from, which means you have access to thousands of new shows and movies no matter where you live. This doesn't just work with Netflix, it works with Disney Plus, Hulu, Max, a UK streamer called BBC iPlayer, and more. I was on a work trip in the UK during the final season of Game of Thrones, and I tried logging into my HBO account to watch a new episode, but the technology wouldn't let me because of geo-blocking. And I wish I had this app at that moment, because I now realize how incredibly easy it is to work around that problem. Here's a more recent example. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is not streaming on Netflix in the US, but I just fired up the episode where Dennis tries to have a peaceful mental health day, and technology keeps interrupting his plans. All I had to do was open ExpressVPN, connect to a UK server, refresh Netflix, and the show just popped up. It's super easy. I've also heard good things about that show called Billions, but I've never been a Showtime subscriber, so I've never seen it. But it's actually available right now on Netflix in South Korea, and with ExpressVPN, it took 5 seconds to switch over and start checking it out. With ExpressVPN, you get high-quality streaming from devices like your phone, laptop, tablet, and TV, and crucially, it protects your privacy and security to keep your information safe from hackers. Stop missing out on great TV and get thousands of new shows with ExpressVPN. We got them to give you all 3 extra months free when you use our special link, expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film to get 3 extra months completely free. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, May 6th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about Jerry Seinfeld's new movie, Unfrosted, and we're going to present an interview with one of that film's writers, Spike Ferriston. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
And Slash Film editor, Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
All right, so Unfrosted arrived on Netflix this past Friday. It is streaming there right now. Before we talk about the movie, guys, I kind of feel like we should just briefly acknowledge that Jerry Seinfeld has been out and making the press rounds for this movie. And I know Chris and Brad well enough at this point to say that Seinfeld has made some comments that we don't agree with.
What?
He doesn't really seem like the best guy, you know, like he's made some extremely questionable decisions in his life. And if there are people out there who are listening, who are thinking, why the hell are these guys even giving this movie any attention when Jerry Seinfeld has done X, Y, and Z? I understand that. I don't begrudge anybody that perspective. I guess with all of that said, we're going to just like try to temporarily put all that stuff aside and talk about this as a movie. So with all of that said, what did you guys think about this movie? Chris, you wrote the review for us. So what did you think about Unfrosted?
You know, I'm of two minds about Unfrosted. Unfrosted is a very stupid movie. It's not what I would call a good movie. And yet I laughed a lot. So I gave it an ultimately like a borderline positive review because as a delivery system for jokes, it does its job. I laughed many times, and I can't like be like, this movie didn't do a job, because what it's trying to do is make you laugh. But when you look beyond like the jokes, like it's the script is like threadbare. As a director, Jerry Seinfeld is really bland. He's like a point and shoot guy, basically. He just sets the camera up and just lets people walk in front of it. And the whole thing has this sort of like ugly fake sheen to it, where it just looks like I watched this with my girlfriend and she was like, is this like CGI? I was like, no, it's just really shiny looking. It's like, so, you know, like I said, I'm of two minds. It's not a great movie, but it does, I guess it does its job. I guess we'll get into like scenes in there, but there's a scene set at a funeral that had me like crying, basically. Yeah. I was laughing so hard. So it's, you know, it's not terrible. It's just, it's not a good movie, but it's a funny movie. That's basically what I'm trying to say here.
Okay, what'd you think, Brad?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. It's very, very funny. It's, you know, if you want to watch this movie, you just want to laugh, like, you're going to have a good time, you're going to enjoy it. I do wish that they took advantage a little bit more of, like, the opportunity there was here to, like, do something that was both clever and stylish and still maintained that that comedic appeal. Because, like, I really like the idea of presenting something as silly as, like, the race to make the first breakfast pastry in the same way as the space race, you know? I kind of wish they would have done it in a way that maybe played it a little more straight so that it felt more like a parody. Because this is very borderline parody. It's like in some ways it feels almost like a Hot Rod kind of movie, but then in other ways it almost feels like they came together. And I kind of wish it had more of that full-on parody approach and didn't, you know, do too much of the winking. But they're like, the cast in this movie is just wild, and like it's just one of those movies where like every minute like somebody new pops up and like you can't help but like be interested in it. But yeah, I almost wish that Jerry Seinfeld wasn't the one to direct this, because I feel like somebody else could have made this into something even better. But as it is, it's very entertaining, even if it's not necessarily like a quality film.
Yeah, I think we're all pretty much in agreement here. I think it just kind of like the whole look of the movie just feels like you're in an office building or something. Like it has just this really flat lighting style. And like Chris said, there's just like no inventive camera moves or any sort of interesting perspective. It just kind of like feels like the camera is like shot, reverse shot, just plopped down and very, you know, functional, just basic, like, let's get this across and let the jokes do most of the heavy lifting kind of thing. Brad, you mentioned something there that I wanted to ask you about. It's been a while since I've seen a movie that is as wacky as this. And it feels to me like there are a bunch of different types of comedy on display here. There are like really broad jokes. There's some physical humor. And then there's stuff that's like pretty esoteric. And I may be wrong about this, but I think part of the reason that people are so passionate and adamant about their love for certain comedies is because the sense of humor in those films aligns with their own sense of humor, so it can feel like a film was made just for them. But Unfrosted has such a wide collection of different comedy types in it, and I was wondering if you know, you've studied comedy more closely than I have. Does that approach feel unusual to you at all?
In some ways, yeah. Like, it was surprising to see such a wide variety, because like there's stuff that's like obviously not so subtle. There's stuff that is in your face. There's really dry jokes. There's stuff that is like obvious dad kind of jokes. You know, there's stuff with little kids where like the kids are meant to be like cute. There's like surprising satire stuff. Like I certainly wasn't expecting for the end of this movie to turn into a take on the January 6th riots. But so yeah, there's something like for I guess for everybody in here, like no matter what your comedic tastes are. And so like I don't know if that was the, you know, the approach that they wanted to take, or like they just wanted to like have all different kinds, you know, of jokes in here. But like I do wonder if that's kind of what contributes to the somewhat unevenness of like where some things feel like they're clever and onto something, and the other things just like, oh, that feels kind of lazy.
Yeah, I was wondering if you felt that, Chris, like the sort of ebb and flow of different comedy stylings coming in and out of the movie.
Yeah, it basically feels like they're throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks, basically. Just like what we'll try every single thing we can think of here. And I guess that works, like I said, because there are a lot of jokes in this that work, but at the same time, it's sort of like that kitchen sink approach also sort of hurts the movie, because there are some, there's like long stretches where I was just like sitting there stone faced. And Then all of a sudden something happens that has me like doubling over laughing. So it's like, it's almost like it's like a joke faucet and they need to, need to turn it off a little bit or something.
Like, or like just make some of the jokes better. Like I think maybe one of the better descriptions of like the kind of comedy that's on display here is it feels like if they made a 30 Rock movie, but it wasn't as clever as 30 Rock actually is. And I feel like if like you would have brought somebody in like Tina Fey and Robert Carlock to like, you know, do a polish of the script or something like that, or if they were the ones who were producing and or directing instead of Jerry Seinfeld, you might have gotten something where they could have kept up that rapid pace of punchlines and they all would have landed.
Yeah. Okay, I'm trying to think if there's anything else we need to really get into before we get into some spoilery stuff, because I wanted to talk to you guys about like specific scenes and get more into that January 6th thing that you alluded to earlier, Brad. Is there anything that you guys can think of that you wanted to say before we like sound the alarm for spoiler stuff? Okay, nothing. All right, so let's do it. So now, spoilers for the movie Unfrosted. This is your final chance. So we have to talk about the Madman cameo, right? Because that's probably like the most insane thing that happens in the movie, even though there's a ton of insane stuff. Like, that was just so unexpected to me. Chris, what was your reaction when you saw that?
You know, on one level, it's so like clumsy the way he's just like, I reached out to some Madison Avenue, and he's like practically winking at the friggin' camera when he says it. But at the same time, I was like, I can't believe like John Hamm and John Slater like agreed to do that. Like I'm kind of surprised that they would be like, yeah, we'll come back and play these characters again. And like, I guess you could argue that like, well, he calls him Roger, but they never actually come out and say like Don Draper, but it's like, it's clearly him playing that role again. And it's kind of like nuts that he would like step back into his like most iconic role to like do this again. But I mean, it's a fun little thing. And yeah, I'm of two minds of it. Like there's like the snob in me is sort of like, they're besmirching the character in a way by having him in this like very silly movie. But at the same time, I kind of like that John Hamm is like, yeah, I'll do that. Why not? Like what, like, you know, money is money. I'll work for money. Why not?
Yeah. This is Mad Men canon as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, exactly.
This is real. What'd you think about it, Brad?
No, I mean, I loved it. It's like, I love surprise cameos like this. And honestly, like, even though like on one hand I could easily see like, oh well, that doesn't feel like it's true to like Don Draper's a character, he doesn't really do anything that isn't un Don Draper like they kind of stay true to like who he is. Like this is how he would pitch if he probably were doing something like this. And even right down to like, you know, having that flirtatious exchange with Melissa McCarthy, like that's maybe the one thing that is like borderline, I guess. It feels like maybe it gets a little too silly for what Don Draper might do, but otherwise I feel like it stays true to the spirit of that character.
Yeah. The CG creature that is created, the little like starfish looking thing,
ravioli or whatever.
Yeah. That's is one of the examples of a thing that I thought like that's a comedy style or a type or like a bit that they were going for that just absolutely did not work for me at all. Like every single time that thing and those characters were on screen, I was like, all right, let's move on and get to the next thing. But the good news about this movie is it moves so quickly from one type of comedy to the next that like, even if you hit a patch where, you know, you're not really vibing with what's going on, it's not too long until it's almost like, I think you should leave or something like that, you know, like in a way where it just feels so sporadic with the type of comedy, like kind of a shotgun approach to things. Did that CG creature bit work better for you guys than it did for me? Brad, what do you think about that?
No, I feel the same way. That was the one, like maybe the biggest gag that I felt like was out of place, especially because it didn't really go anywhere significant. Like there, at one point it seemed like it might become a significant plot point and upend something, but then it really doesn't. I think the only point that it actually worked for me is when it popped up in Kellogg's office and scared Amy Schumer and she screamed at it. Like that was the one point where I was like, okay, that's pretty funny. But otherwise, yeah, that little bit didn't really work for me. But what did work for me tied to that bit was Bobby Moynihan as Chef Boyardee.
Yeah, I mean, so what did you like about that performance? I think we should mention for people who may be listening to this but didn't see the movie or something, a lot of the characters are dressed as like serial mascots just in their normal everyday life and nobody comments on it. So that's one of the sort of like just funny visual gags of this movie. And that very much extends to Bobby Moynihan as Chef Boyardee, who just like dresses exactly like you would expect the guy to look from the can of ravioli or whatever. So what did you like about that performance?
It's just a big, silly performance. I love when Bobby Moynihan does characters like that. And I also liked the continuing evolution of the dynamic between him and, I forget Thomas Lennon's character name, but how they kind of turned into like the makeshift dads of that little ravioli creature. Like that was one aspect of that inclusion that like was amusing, just to see how those characters bounce off each other in that way. But yeah, no, I like when Bobby Moynihan pops up and does big characters like this.
Chris, what do you think about Hugh Grant as the Tony the Tiger figure?
You know, I like Hugh Grant. I kind of think he's like phoning it in this movie. He kind of is just like, all right, he's doing his Hugh Grant thing. Like he's reached a point in his career where he can play this sort of character in his sleep, and that's sort of what he's doing here. I did feel like his entire subplot felt like really secondary, and the way it morphs into the January 6th parody, it was just like, boy, I don't know if this works at all. But it's not like a bad performance. It was just sort of like, all right, like Hugh Grant is not really trying that hard here, but he doesn't really have a lot to work with. He's just sort of like hanging out in the movie.
Yeah, we got to talk about that. Like Fred Armisen at the very end of this movie is essentially trying to certify the creation of the Pop-Tart, basically, while a rioting band of mascots storms the Kellogg's building. And Hugh Grant's character is like wearing the sort of like Viking helmet.
It was
imagery.
Like the Magosh shaman or something like that. They called that real guy, real guy who were dressed like that.
Yes. So, I mean, Brad, you said this completely caught you by surprise. I mean, very much in the same boat. Like, what the hell is this movie doing? And like, what is it even trying to say with this? Like, did you go beyond a surface level and have like a read of what this movie was trying to do? Or did you think they were just tapping into this event because everybody knows about it and they thought it would be funny to have mascots being the people who are storming a building?
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's one of those things where like, it feels like they found a way to like, parody it without doing a direct satire or parody of it, which is probably the best way to approach something like that, because as we've seen, if you've been watching Saturday Night Live over the past, I don't know, 8 years or so, maybe even the decade, it's tough to lampoon the most like ridiculous and also like tragic things that are happening in our political system right now, because it's already reached a level of insanity and ridiculousness that trying to make fun of it takes something even more absurd, and it can be really hard to match that. It kind of reminded me how do you guys remember that movie Butter?
Butter? I don't think I've ever heard of this.
Jennifer Garner, Hugh Jackman, Olivia Wilde. It's a 2011 comedy directed by Jim Field Smith, and it takes place at the Iowa State Fair butter sculpture contest, and like watches this like intense competition between these people who are sculpting butter things. And the movie itself is meant to be kind of a metaphor for the Iowa State political primary that happens for presidential campaigns. And it kind of like that movie feels like it's a very like it's almost forced in that way. And that's kind of what this felt like, with like trying to make it feel like a January 6th thing at the end.
Mm. Butter. Interesting, man. What a deep pull there, Brad. Okay, Chris, what did you think about that whole, I guess, subplot of the movie?
Yeah, it just, it did not work for me at all. And it just felt, it felt really like clunky. And it's weird to say, but it feels, even though the January 6th thing did not happen that long ago, it feels like dated already to like make a joke about. Like, it feels like if this came out closer to January 6th events and then they did it, it'd be like, okay, that may, like, that's funnier. But now it almost feels like, just like so much has happened since then. It just feels like it's old news, which is a weird thing to say because it should be old news that there was a violent insurrection to overthrow the government. But like, it's, that's the time that we live in, such insane times that it already feels like old news at this point.
Yeah. Okay. So I wanted to, I guess before we wrap up here, I wanted to mention a couple of like just favorite scenes or give us an opportunity to shout out any moments that we thought were worth bringing attention to. And Chris, you mentioned my favorite scene in the movie is that funeral scene. Like Jack McBrayer's character, the bicycle creator, Steve Schwinn, dies in an explosion. And then there's that really great follow-up line where Seinfeld is on the phone and he's like, Steve was vaporized, but we had a funny mix up with Chuck.
Yes.
And then there's this whole funeral scene where they pour cereal and milk into the open grave.
And his widow is like, what is happening? Like that entire, I was like crying. I was laughing so hard during that. Cause it just keeps going. That scene. It just like, that's definitely my favorite scene in the whole movie.
Yeah. Everything just keeps like, it keeps topping itself. Like there's a moment where this random woman just walks up to the grave and she screams, why, and Mrs. Schwinn is like, who is she?
Yeah.
And then the woman just walks away and you never know, like there's just, and then snap, crackle and pop, like folding the prize inside the cereal box as if it were a folded flag and presenting it to her. I mean, yeah, I was like losing it. I was crying on my couch. I was laughing so hard at that. So like, you know, I feel the same way as you do, Chris, where like it's hard for me to say that this is a terrible movie because it made me cry because I was laughing so hard at it, but it is like a very shoddy movie, but it has these moments of brilliance that I just like, I'm very glad that this movie exists because it made me laugh really, really hard. So I don't know, any favorite scenes or moments for you, Brad, that you wanted to call out here?
I wanted to give a shout out to the two kids that are in the movie. They're new actors because they get an introduced credit in it, and their names are Bailey Sheets and Eleanor Sweeney, because they're like adorable kids who have these very unique voices that like almost sounded like they were being voiced by like cartoon voice actors. But they're so like endearing and earnest, and they're just really good in these parts of the movie. And they kept popping up, and I thought they were really funny.
Yeah. They were kind of like Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland or something, you know, they felt like they were plucked from a different era in some way.
Like they felt like they could have been in like the Little Rascals.
Yes, exactly. Chris, any other moments that like really made you cackle?
Not like cackle, but I don't know. Like the funeral thing is the only thing I just keep coming back to because it's like the thing that stood out the most to me. But just that the precursor to that too, where Jack McBrayer blows up and it's like, oh, there he is. And it just turns out to be the other guy coming out. He's like, no, he's dead. I was like, I thought that was just like fucking hilarious. Like that entire sequence building up to that is just like the most solid. Oh, the other thing I really liked is like when Seinfeld goes to get Melissa McCarthy at NASA and he's like, do you really think you're going to the moon? And she's like, no. And they both like laugh hysterically and leave. I was like, that, like, I wanted more of that. Like, just like that's really like stupid humor, but that's the kind of humor that really gets me. Like, so
yeah. The movie's interesting because it weaves in some stuff that is historically accurate and then takes giant swings with real world stuff and like creative liberties and like does not adhere to reality at all and for most of the movie. But it like sprinkles in these little moments and little sort of observations about real life historical figures that like feel pretty close to the truth. So it's just interesting, like the way that they chose to do it. And I asked Spike Ferriston about that in the interview, and he was basically just like, if it served the joke and served the moment that we were looking for, we did it. And if not, we just like made up our own reality basically. So I just thought it was an interesting approach to a comedy like this, but,
I really liked, the recurring bits with Walter Cronkite. When he would like do just a full legitimate news report and then just have like a quick aside where he's talking about silly putty or being depressed or, you know?
Yeah.
I really liked Bill Burr as JFK. I
thought yes.
There's a part where he's like giving a speech on TV and he's like, I know a lot about boats. When I was a kid, I was sickly and they got me a dinghy. And it's like, it's such a throwaway line, But like that really made me laugh because you think he's going to talk about, because JFK was like a PT commander and he became famous for saving his patrol and stuff like that, but like that's not what he's talking about at all. I just thought that was hilarious.
And then and then also kind of like to bounce back, because like that, I feel like the JFK bit too kind of shows like the highs and lows of like what they did and what they could have done. Because like the one thing with JFK that I thought was such like a lazy throwaway thing was he's talking about Jackie Onassis. She's like, she's really mad at me because since you know who, saying happy birthday to me. It's like, really? You went with like a Marilyn Monroe happy birthday joke like that? But then on the other end of the spectrum, I really like the thing where the secretary calls in and she's like, the Doublemint twins are here. And he's like, are they wearing the outfits?
Yeah. And the way he leaned into the delivery and stuff where he was like, ask not, like just the accent and all that. I thought it was really good. Okay. So I guess let's take a break and then we'll come back and play this interview.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So Spike Ferrison has been a writer for David Letterman, Space Ghost Coast to Coast, the 2007 animated film B-Movie, and of course the NBC hit series Seinfeld. He teamed up with Jerry Seinfeld, Andy Robin, and Barry Marder to write Unfrosted. And I talked to him a couple of weeks ago about the long writing process and how in some ways this movie was actually a response to Nomadland of all things. So here's my conversation with Spike Ferrison. Hi Spike, how are you?
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. So when this project was first announced, I remember Jerry Seinfeld saying that it was a giant, crazy comedy movie. And I remember thinking about Pop-Tarts, like, I don't know about that. We'll see about that. But it really is a giant, crazy comedy movie. And I'm curious about the evolution here. And I think this originated with a stand-up bit, but what were the earliest conversations that you remember having with Jerry and the other writers about what this movie could be? And then how did that vision change over time?
Well, we still don't agree about it. He thinks it evolved from his stand-up bit. It didn't from where I'm sitting. It evolved from a question I asked him a long time ago. I think as far back as 2013, where I said, if you could get, if there was a time machine here, where would you go? Where would Jerry Seinfeld go in a time machine, right? Valid question, right? You interview people. And he said, oh, no question, 1963, the invention of the Pop-Tart. I went, what? I was just so genuinely confused by his answer. I said, not the Marx Brothers, not Abe Lincoln, he goes, no, Battle Creek, Michigan, Spike, it's Battle Creek, Michigan, the invention of the Pop-Tart, and they're inventing kids' cereals, and there's toys, and I went, oh, okay, and I said, why the interest, and what do you find so funny about it? He goes, because there were serious men in serious companies in suits inventing silly things and taking it seriously. And when Post came up with this product that threatened to blow up the breakfast cereal world, Kellogg's had 6 months to catch up. And it made it, and I saw what he was seeing in the story, and we started laughing, and it became this, you know, writer's room joke over years, like almost 10 years. We'd get together and we'd add another scene to it and riff on it. And what if George Clooney was the executive and was in Hawaii and heard about it? And what if it's like, you know, the right stuff where when Kellogg's hears about it, there's a Jeff Goldblum scene of him running down the hallway. We know, sit down. And you know, that became the movie that we wrote, the movie you just saw.
So I know for Jerry's comedy, he's really ruthless about shaving syllables off of words to achieve the perfect flow in delivering a joke. Did you all have a similar approach to crafting a screenplay? Like, what was the actual writing process like for you all?
It was unique because it was taking place during the pandemic. It was the first thing that I've ever written just like this, where we didn't have boards up. We didn't have full outlines up. It was just the four of us talking on Zoom a couple hours every day. And working out story and, you know, someone there taking notes and typing things in for us. And it was an experiment, really. Yeah, you know, from day one, we never thought we were actually going to make this thing. We never thought, let's call Kellogg's and ask them. Let's just write something for us that's fun and see where it goes. And here we are, you know. So it's unique in that sense. And I'm being 100% honest, it was... You know, we never thought we were making this movie. It was just a way to pass time during the pandemic, and a way we thought, like, I forget the movie, but it, in the darkest part of the pandemic, like really the most tragic, where we were all like, oh my God, Hollywood released this movie about this woman living in a van.
Oh yeah, Nomadland.
Nomadland, and she's peeing in a bowl or something, and we all went, "What is wrong with Hollywood right now?" If ever there was a time for an old-fashioned comedy, it's now. You know, maybe we're the idiots that need to write it. I don't know, but that really was our guiding force, was that movie release, and Hollywood, in our opinion, humble opinions, just had it wrong because we were all at home, just everything was bleak. You know, shouldn't we try to distract folks for an hour and a half? And, you know, here we are.
Well, you certainly succeeded on that front. You mentioned Kellogg's earlier, and as a producer, I'm curious about, like, what kind of conversations did you actually have with Kellogg's and Post? Did they ask for anything in return for the use of their company names here? How did that work?
Zero. Again, we never thought we were making it. No malicious intent towards Kellogg's. We just never thought we're making it, so why ask permission? We also didn't know who we were making this movie for, so we didn't have any adults in the room. It was just us idiot kids writing 200 pages of whatever we wanted to, right? So it wasn't until a couple of weeks ago that Kellogg's even heard about it. You know, the movie had been announced when the deal was, and we were in production, and they were, of course, curious about what we had written. And we, you know, we never really called them, and Netflix has our back and said, look, you know, they just made a movie, Ford versus Ferrari, which is about a real thing that happened out in the world between, they didn't, you know, I talked to the director of that movie because we didn't call Ford or Ferrari. We just told our story the way we wanted to tell it. And there was no, I don't think anybody watching this movie presumes that we're going to be telling that when they see Jerry Seinfeld's name, right? You think, oh, this guy's going to try to make me laugh. Not this guy's going to tell me this serious story. Now, recently, Kellogg's Kellanova, so one of the two owns the Pop-Tart. They have seen the trailer and they couldn't be more excited about it. But we're not Barbie. We didn't make this with Mattel. We love Barbie. We're big fans. And I'm personally impressed with the billions of dollars they made with that movie. I love it. We're not that movie.
Okay.
We made a supersized Seinfeld episode about the Pop-Tart.
Yeah.
That way.
So this movie feels like the type of thing where there could have just been tons of really ridiculous scenes that didn't make the cut. And so I was wondering if there was something that you or your collaborators really wanted to include, but ultimately decided to either never actually shoot or just to leave on the cutting room floor.
Fantastic question. There's about 100 pages, to be honest with you. I'm not lying. The first draft was 220 pages. And I didn't say no to the guys. I was like, whatever you want. Oh, you want to do a car chase with the kids? Sure, let's do that. Oh, how about a fight after Kennedy is assassinated because of the Pop-Tart, which, by the way, is no longer in the movie. But we connected the Kennedy assassination to the invention of the Pop-Tart. What if LBJ shuts it down and Walter Cronkite fights him in the Oval Office, takes a presidential portrait and crashes it over his head, and LBJ goes, "My Coolidge!" You know, we had, there's so many scenes in this that didn't get made because it would have been ridiculous to even shoot them. But yeah, maybe someday there'll be a featurette on those pages. There are about 100, and they would be good. They would be good to talk about.
So how did you decide the moments where you wanted to actually include the real historical truth or something approximating it? Like, how did you pick and choose the times when you actually wanted to squeeze those moments in?
That was just based on story. You know, again, it was a very similar approach to a Seinfeld episode. When it benefited us comedically, we did it. When it didn't, we changed it. That really was Jerry's guiding principle, and that was Jerry and Larry's guiding principle when we were making the show. But we all agreed that this 6-month window between post announcement, you know, the story post announced it, but they didn't have it out of the lab. It kept falling apart and catching fire. That's real. They toast it and it would burn, but they announced it. Kellogg's was caught off guard and had 6 months to catch up. That gives you the stakes. The breakfast world is about to change. The whole breakfast paradigm is shifting, and it gives you the ticking clock right there. You got 6 months. So we kept that intact because we knew it would help be a strong structure underneath to hang our stupidity on top of, if that makes sense.
Yes. So I want to ask you something very spoilery, and I'm just going to let you know that I'm going to wait until after the movie is out on Netflix before I publish this. So please speak freely here. How in the heck did you get John Hamm and John Slattery to reprise their Mad Men characters here?
Well, let me top line the developments that lead up to it. One, while we were writing this, we would take breaks and watch Mad Men on YouTube just to make us laugh. We considered that really a sitcom. And Jerry had just rewatched the whole season again because of the pandemic. So he's like, "You got to see this scene." He goes, "I don't understand why these advertising executives are so mean. They're just writing TV commercials." And we'd watch the scene and we would roar and laugh at John Hamm and Slattery's performance. At some point while we were writing, Jerry said, "You know, just out of the blue, I remember this so clearly." He goes, "It is 63 and Mad Men took, it is reasonable to assume that Kellogg's would have called the Mad Men to come in and pitch their product because we don't have a name for it yet. You know, it's just a toastable." They would come in and pitch the whole marketing campaign for us. And we started laughing about, of course, it would be weirdly sexual and inappropriate. And they would say, "We're a children's cereal company." And then he would berate them. And Jerry said, we got to do it. And I said, "Wouldn't that be amazing?" And then that became, you know, it always fell on Jerry's shoulders as a producer and a director. We were like, "Well, you know, I know John Hamm a little, but he's not going to take my call. If you call him, then." And so Jerry picked up the phone and called Slattery and called Hamm. And that began the conversation. And, you know, we prepared that scene specially for them. We had Bill Pope, our DP, kind of look at Mad Men and look at the lighting. We had some of the actual furniture. One of our set designers, set decorators, I probably don't have the phrase right, but had worked on Mad Men and said, "I've got a surprise for you boys. This is stuff from Don Draper's office." And we were
wow.
So that's in, you know, some of those scenes, and it all came together. It all came together quick, thanks to John and John Slattery, and the scene crushes. It's one of my favorite scenes in the movie, and that's Jerry amazing. Gets like fantasy Mad Men camp, you know. Yeah. He gets to be in a scene in Mad Men, a show that we all love that he was never in, and you've seen the scene.
Oh man, that's unreal. This whole cast is incredible. Tell me a little bit about the funeral scene, because that was the section that I just, that cracked me up the most. The section where I was laughing the hardest.
So, you know, again, when we were kind of trying to calibrate the world of Battle Creek, Michigan, and, you know, what the serial world would look like if we made it up, there was this idea that that you could, if you died and you died in the line of duty, you would be buried with serial honors. And it was really Jerry's notion from the start. And I don't think the rest of us really understood it, but he said, let's do a funeral scene, because you don't get excited about funeral scenes. He goes, but you know, all the characters there. And I'm like, right. So Tony the Tiger would go, he was great, you know, and the jokes started writing themselves. And, you know, I have to give Jerry credit. Like we were talking earlier, there was a very large script, a very expensive script, and we had to make lots and lots of sacrifices and cuts to get it shot. And that was brought up a lot by the money folks on our production staff. And Jerry defended it every time. And he said, no, you're not. This is the one thing I want to shoot. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be funny. And we're going to do this. Fine. You know, find money somewhere else, Spike. And I would. And I said, we got it. And I would tell everyone, Jerry wants to shoot this scene. We're doing it. And now there it is, you know. But that's really the purest, I think, Seinfeld scene from top to bottom, writing wise, is that cemetery scene.
So I think I have time for one more question. You mentioned Seinfeld a couple times. I was wondering if you had a favorite memory from your time working on that show.
There's so many. I mean, it was such a magical experience, but here's not my favorite memory, but an interesting one. My first episode was The Soup Nazi, and I was very nervous about going in. And the night we were shooting it, I was walking to the stage, and the O.J. Simpson verdict came in, and he was released. And we were all in a state of shock. The country was in a state of shock that this guy had been. And I was just like, there goes this episode. It's done. I'm cursed. You know, the audience is going to come in. No one's going to laugh. And Larry and Jerry are going to fire my ass. It's going to be over. And to my surprise, everyone needed a laugh, you know. It's kind of like the environment we wrote this whole movie in during the pandemic. He goes, and people were laughing harder than normal. And, you know, that was such a, you know, the start of the story is a little difficult and tricky, but the ending of it for me was one of my favorite memories, was just like, you know, watching that cast and watching Larry do his thing and watching the audience laugh. That's the whole game.
Yeah,
where I learned it. That's what we're here to do. In times of darkness, that set it aside. Your job is to entertain. That's what we do. That's all we do. Don't take anything too seriously.
Well, thank you so much, Spike. I'm out of time with you, but this has been terrific. And congratulations on this really, really weird, really delightful movie.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Take care. All right, guys. Before we wrap up, any closing thoughts on Unfrosted? Any other moments or anything like that you wanted to shout out before we wrap it up here?
You know, Jerry Seinfeld, don't direct any more movies. You can be in them, but you're not a very good read a book about filmmaking. Like, it really feels like he was just like, I can do it. I can do this. How hard can it be? And it's like, it's not that easy. But yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I don't think this is a good movie, but it is a very funny movie. So it does its job.
Any closing thoughts, Brad?
No, I think we pretty much covered it. You know, it's I'm glad this movie exists on some level. It's you know, it's kind of it's just a fun thing. It's not trying to do anything too challenging for better and for worse. But you know, it's for a 90 minute breeze of a comedy about the making of Pop-Tarts. Like, I'm fine with it.
Okay. You can find more about Unfrosted at slashfilm.com. I'm going to link to Chris's review in the show notes here. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you could find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.